Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. It's a delight to be with you. My name is Steve Kramer, and it's equally a delight to be with my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Great to be here.
It's great to be here. And listeners, I have to say, me and Dorothy are friends, and so sometimes I get a little tip on what her quote is going to be because she's so good at bringing quotes. And the quote really does, for this week, Dorothy, I hope you don't mind that I just, you know, let it out of the bag. But I think maybe the quote really sums up. We're talking this whole month about adaptability, and today we're going to talk about managing the adaptation process, because certainly it's all a process. I mean, process and adaptation really go together, we hope, right?
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you might just start
with a quote, because it seems to be a really good introduction to this today's show.
Okay, well, I'm actually going to give you two, Steve.
Oh, so I don't know.
The first is, change is the only constant in life. One's ability to adapt to those changes will determine your success in life. So I think that's the one you were referring to, right, Steve?
Yes. Yeah, because that's so true, right? I mean, it's change is it. It's everything, every
that's
moment
right.
Be new. So how do you roll with that? Are you successful in your ability to do so? Nice.
Yep.
And the other one?
The other one, you can't cross the ocean unless you have the courage to lose sight of the shore. So there's always, change is a constant, but it also involves risk or the willingness to try new things.
Yeah, for sure. Courage. Ooh, that's a big word. Dorothy, I thought it might be interesting to just start the show. You know, I've done a little bit of research as to, you know, what life forms on the planet really do display this, you know, ease, or at least, you know, they've aced managing adaptation because they've basically been around so long. We talk quite a bit about Mother Earth and her resilience, really what she's up against with us, we human beings. But for the longest time, there are living beings on this planet who have really adapted well. So I thought I've got eight of them, and I thought it might be fun to just go through them quickly and talk about what it is they're so good. How do they manage, you know, adapting to change? So the first one is bacteria, which is very interesting. I mean, you know, we personally, human beings, can't live without bacteria. In fact, they say that 10% of the human dry body weight consists of bacteria, and talk about interdependence and, you know, really this idea of being interconnected. I mean, we've got full, you know, environments living inside of our gut and inside of our whole body that we can't live without. They assist us. And, you know, you even in your book, in Principles of Abundance for the Cosmic Citizen, I noticed you've mentioned bacteria, which is a really interesting fact. I don't know if you'd want to bring it forward, or I certainly can.
Well, what's interesting is that bacteria are, in some ways, the most basic form of life that we deal with, and they are tremendously adaptable and resilient. And, you know, we've had all of these major traumas where most of the living population has died off, and what has continued each time has been bacteria. and they are what have built life back up, and they do it by networking, by working together.
Yeah. And isn't that interesting? We mentioned on the last couple shows that the Earth has seen, there have been plenty of times, five times, that the Earth has, life has just been wiped off the Earth as we know it, you know, and it comes back, mm-hmm. and it's largely it's because of the response to bacteria. You mentioned in the book that they have access to a single gene pool across the entire species of bacteria. And so it's this transfer of bits of genetic material and reorganizing to make new life. And that's how it becomes different each time that the Earth sort of rebounds. So bacteria, we have to celebrate them. But I'll go through the others because, you know, we could probably go on the whole show about these. But there's phytoplankton, which is on the surface of the ocean, and their main gig is photosynthesis. I mean, they turn a million tons of atmospheric carbon dioxide per day into organic material, and they are responsible for half of all photosynthetic activity on Earth. So they've aced making food out of sunlight. You know, it's a good case for us to turn sunlight into usable energy. You know, they've done it and they've sustained, and they give back, you know, their food for the whales. But then there's ants, and they get by because of social organization and their ability to modify habitats. You know, we always see ants sort of trucking along with a big old leaf or a stick, you know, they're aces at exploiting resources and defending themselves. Interestingly enough, they colonize every landmass on Earth, and there's more ants on the planet by weight than all human beings combined. That's
amazing.
That's fascinating. Another one is beetles, and they are 25% of all life forms on Earth. That's pretty amazing. And they get by with their ability to break down animal and plant debris, including waste and fungi. So we've talked about that quite a bit. I mean, that fungi is just omnipresent. And beetles mm-hmm. can break that down easily. But, you know, an interesting study just said that, speaking of 40%, they're 40% of all known insects are beetles. And the number of beetles in Europe, it looks like in the last, I think it was the last 5 years, it's as if beetles are just leaving Europe, hightailing it out. So interesting what's going on with the insect kingdom and the planet Earth.
Do they know why they're leaving?
They don't know why. They're just noticing that the numbers are down considerably and it's increasing. Mm. So, you know, you have to say they must have some, you know, they've got an instinct that I wish we could speak their language. Next is termites, because they divide labor. They also take care of their young collectively, and they give back by producing copious amounts of hydrogen. So this idea of working together, collective care, we could be very good at that. Grass mm-hmm. is another one. It's the most versatile life form on the planet. It's adapted to almost every environment, really taking advantage of, you know, whenever we clear cut, grass comes right in. So grass is one that really knows how to manage change. And then there's cockroaches, which are just capable of staying alive without food, without oxygen, really surviving on limited resources. That's what keeps them around. And you know, they can even survive, you know, radiation, which is fascinating. And rats is the last one. And they're basically the most resilient mammal on the planet. They will eat almost anything. They're expert jumpers, expert climbers, expert swimmers. And I think their main gig is that they can produce 5 litters a year, 26 to 22 babies per litter. So in 1 year, a single pair of rats can be 200. Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're the most successful, if you want to call successful, in terms of being resilient, but also being able to really reproduce. You know, humans and chickens and rats were the three most populous animals on the planet. So I thought that was interesting, just in terms of who do we live amongst, you know, that really has been able to manage their way through changes on the planet. And may it be so that we are able to do the same, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that you know, the things that you've, the entities that you've listed, most of them are ones that we don't get along with very well.
Isn't that interesting? I had a pet rat, Dorothy, when I was
a kid.
I did for many years, but you're right. I mean, even we think of bacteria, most of us think of bacteria as, oh, give me an antibiotic, right?
Exactly, exactly. Cockroaches are not exactly invited into our homes and kitchens, you know.
Do you think there's life forms that are that are sort of looking down at us in the same way we look down at an ant and looking at humanity going, ooh, in the same way we look at cockroaches? Maybe.
There very well could be.
Yeah.
I think part of what you're getting at, Steve, which is, I think, important for all of us to remember, is that humans are only one of many, 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 many life forms. We're not the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
There are some things that we do better than other species and other things that other species do much better than we do. So we're part of a family of species as opposed to being the apex, so to speak.
Yes, yes. And so responsibility is what comes to mind. I mean, I think when I think of what is it that humans used, you know, to our benefit to manage change. And, you know, I kind of made a list for myself and I thought creativity, you know, we're able to manipulate our environment to suit our needs. You know, that's adaptability. I think of creating antibiotics, you know, even airplanes, air conditioning. I mean, we really have, you know, intelligence takes us to a certain way. A certain part of the distance and daring, you know, we've got free will, self-observation. We can observe ourselves. We've created the internet. We move toward, you know, developing a global mind. And I think of this, the plight of this, you know, I think we can't help but talk about, you know, current events, the plight of these people seeking asylum that are walking 2,000 miles, you know, and mm-hmm. some of them in flip-flops with a backpack. And you think mm-hmm. this talk about the quote you said about courage, you know, about crossing the ocean, you got to lose sight of the shore. They have lost sight of the shore walking with holding children, flip-flops. And so many of us, you know, imagine you right now just walking, you know, across the country mm-hmm. with flip-flops and your child and your belongings in a backpack, not knowing the level at which these people are capable of adapting. First of all, is commendable. And it just says, how is it that we ourselves cannot, you know, in a way, adapt enough in our intellect and our mind's eye to sort of take a look at the bigger picture of the situation? We see so many people sort of just wanting to write it off, I find.
Well, I think, you know, we're going to come back to this several times this week and next week, but... part of adaptability is being able to see beyond ourselves and our own self-interest.
Yeah.
And I think that's an area that really requires some examination. You were giving examples of, you know, what's happened due to our intellect in terms of creating antibiotics and all of these things, but we unfortunately are often very short-sighted. You know, we create antibiotics which then lead to super viruses or super bacteria that adapt to,
right.
to the antibiotics
yeah. Yeah.
and get us into even more trouble. Or we create some kind of solution that appears to work well for us, but it doesn't work well for other species. We create a way of life that we are very comfortable with and we don't want to... we don't necessarily want to share that because we see that as a we may see that as a loss or as being threatened, which is, I think, part of what goes on, you know, with these pictures of the migrants that are walking, seeking asylum in another country. And I'm not sure what the solution is, Steve. You know, we talk about, you know, if you can walk a mile in another's shoes.
Yes.
That doesn't seem to be a concept that is very widely embraced these days. And I know for myself, I don't know if I've shared it on the show, but my family were refugees. We had to flee from China when Mao Zedong took over, and we left with virtually nothing. And then we had to make our way. You know, we had all of the threats that occurred, and we had a happy ending to the story, because we had a number of people looking out for us who helped along the way. But I will never forget that feeling of desperation, you know, and of that there's something wrong, that we can't stay and be where it is that we love and live.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is, you know, it is a double-edged sword. You know, as I was listing this idea of free will and self-observation, you know, it's we will often, as human beings, it's too much of a good thing. You know, we never stop then thinking of ourselves. We get self-centered and we cling and we hold on, or we use our will and it is, you know, harmful to others. We don't see the repercussions. We don't take responsibility or, we're going to go to a break, but Dorothea, I'd love to continue that just a little bit more, the conversation. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about managing the process of adaptation. We'll be back after these words.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Main. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmain.com.
Are you looking to grow spiritually, expand your consciousness, increase psychic abilities? Well, there's a free app for that. Pure Light offers audios that transmit high spiritual frequencies to help you awaken to your full potential. Hundreds of audios created by some of the world's top energy healers, and many are free. Enjoy the latest in conscious technology and download Pure Light today. To find out more, visit purelightaudio.com.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. And this is a tip with purpose. Be willing to make a change for the good. If you want to know what your thoughts were like in the past, look at your body today. If you want to know what your body will be like in the future, look at your thoughts today. This was Deepak Chopra who said that. And it's true. But it's never, ever too late to make a change. And many things can be reversed. If you put your mind into it and make an effort, now you can make the change and tomorrow you will feel much better. Start now and look forward. Past is the past. There's no future in it. But in the now, you can find the future for tomorrow. I hope this tip helps you. You can reach me at SwissHypnotherapy.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothea, I just wanted to pick up the conversation where we left off with a sort of a wow, you know, I mean, that you have experienced this yourself and can sort of really relate to the plight of these people. What I find that are migrating, of course, talking about the now swelling up to 5,000, you know, I think some numbers have even said it's up to 7. Making their way to a better life. And I think so much of the conversation in these current events is so fear-based. It has nothing to do with what the situation is that these people are moving away from, that life has actually become, there's not the ability to adapt. There's too much harm, too much violence. And the adaptation process is one of leaving and moving towards something new. It seems like so much of the conversation is really about what's going to happen to me and not what has happened to these human beings, and is there a way I could help, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how perceived, you know, when you, as you were really forced to migrate, was wondering what was the experience of being received?
Of being received?
Being received, and when you ended in your final destination with your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we ultimately had to change countries, which is similar to what these people are. We had to go to a country where we didn't speak the language. We didn't know the customs. We were welcomed in the way in which these persons seeking asylum would be welcomed by organizations here that want to help asylum seekers transition. But that doesn't mean that everybody around was thrilled that we were there or made it any easier for us. And I would just wish for people who are fearful of, you know, the when they see the media images and stuff, I would wish for them that they would think for a moment what it would be like to one day walk out of their home and their community and have something happen that made it absolutely impossible for them to go back, in the sense that they would die if they went back. Yeah. You know, if there was some kind of explosion, chemical explosion or something, and they left with nothing and none of their old ties, none of their ability to be there, and they had to instead turn and face an uncertain future with language issues and you know, all, everything else that's involved. It's a very painful experience. It is difficult to make that choice. This is not a choice that's made lightly. This is not people who, you know, woke up one day and said, you know, wouldn't it be fun to go and invade the U.S., so to speak.
Yeah.
Being a refugee is very, very, very painful. Even if you don't have physical, you know, issues going on, emotionally, it's heart-wrenching to leave your home.
Yeah.
And to have to make that decision, whether it's forced upon you or whether you yourself evaluate the circumstances and say, this is the only option that I can see that will make life possible.
Yeah. And well, and I think, you know, when I think about adaptability, like in terms of managing the adaptation process, what we're talking about today, I think the responsibility really lies on people to take a look at themselves who are resistant to this situation in any way. You know, that should you ponder these people coming to the U.S. and you have some resistance to that or feel fear, you need to look at your capacity to adapt to perhaps immigrants coming to the country, which is, I mean, that's what this country was based upon and built upon. So it should be a very natural sort of process. But I think it talks about why people fear change. You know, there's so much rhetoric going on about this is what will happen if these people come here. And it has so much to do with this fearing the status quo, fearing change. My life is going to change and for the worse, because powers that be are certainly putting this negative spin upon it when, you know, this country is built upon immigrants. But that aside, it begs us to sort of look at why do we fear adapting? Why do we fear change? Yeah.
Well, I think the other aspect of that, I don't want to get us away from the adaptability theme too much, but I just want to interject that to me, it gets back to this whole myth of scarcity, which is part of the fear that's being played on right now.
Yes.
There is enough for all of us. Now, there may not be enough for all of us to live as millionaires, but there is enough for all of us to live a good life and welcome others in and recognize that others have things to contribute as well. Our life becomes richer
Absolutely.
And fuller. So I think that's part of what part of a dynamic to recognize.
Absolutely. Yeah. Abundance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's really this fear of the unknown that seems to be, you know, what will your future look like?
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be, you know, what is not, what's keeping people locked in this sort of illusion of
well,
keeping these people at bay, you know?
Well, and Steve, this has become to me an even more important dynamic, our ability to be adaptable. Switching from the refugee immigrant scenario, technologically, our whole society is undergoing rapid change. In some technical fields, they say that the half-life of knowledge is about 18 months now. And what's being done with artificial intelligence is going to dramatically change almost everything about our lives. So if we're not prepared to adapt now, we better get ready, because the only thing that is constant is change.
Yeah. Well, I know every time my computer has a new operating system, which is just recently... my body goes through the adaptation process of, oh, okay, now the time is on the right side, and now my mm-hmm. and you watch yourself sort of immediately become a little bit, oh, why? And you know, you just have to learn to roll with it and realize that that it's a good thing, that it will create new scenarios, new synapses in our brain, right?
But I think another, you know, if we talk about why we might resist adaptation, why we might fear change, is we can get attached in a way that we may not recognize, in that if we do something differently in the future, then we may start to criticize and say, well, see, we should have been doing that all along. You know, we were wrong. And so the way that we can make ourselves, quote, right, is to keep doing things the same way and not experiment with new ways of doing things. It's an odd self-criticism that can get in our way.
Yes. I also find that this idea of where we change, what gets in the way of us being adaptable or changing, is there's safety in numbers. You know, sometimes... Well, it came to me, this idea of conforming versus adapting, that mm-hmm. they're really not one and the same, that conforming is change as the result of social expectations, that we're acting in accordance to somebody else's expectation. And it makes me think of that story I told when I was a kid and all the neighbors were around, and I sort of outed myself because they were all commenting on the it was a Hercules movie on the Amazonians, and I was commenting on Hercules, and my brother sort of said, hey, you know, you can't do that. In a sense, you've got to conform. But actually, I was a bit evolved, I guess, as a little kid. I saw it as adapting, which was, you know, I'm going to just let this be for now and observe what's going on and eventually come around. But there's something to just going, okay, I'm going to conform so that I see what is expected of me. I don't have to go out on a limb. You know, I don't have to leave the shore. So I think often we will just conform to group think and group act. And then, you know, we don't learn anything new. We don't go out on a limb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's another aspect too, Steve. You know, we can talk about the cycle of change and, the first thing that needs to happen is we need to be aware that there's something that we don't know or that we don't know how to do, or that we need to learn something different. And once we recognize that we do need to learn something, then as we master that or we start a new behavior, that new behavior is initially uncomfortable and unfamiliar. We call this transitioning from conscious incompetence to conscious competence. And for anyone who has traveled a lot and lived in other countries, you know that there's that period of culture shock where, and what's happening there is that the reflexive ways in which you behave are no longer appropriate, and you're having to think always, how close am I supposed to stand to people? Am I supposed to shake hands or not? Am I supposed to have eye contact or not? We have to become so vigilant in order to be appropriate that it's very uncomfortable. And then after a while, it becomes automatic. We become unconsciously competent. But that period of discomfort is, I think, part of why we fear the change process. We fear what we're going to go through in that process of adapting to a new situation.
So I suppose in the way you presented that, there is a period where we, in a way, we do conform as a way of just learning skills, learning by looking at to another, how is it done here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even
That's
as
right.
a child with the neighborhood kids, I said, oh, danger in my response. How are they doing it? I'm going to observe for a while. And then hopefully then we come into our own, mm-hmm. and we sort of do it our own way. But it is indeed a process. Dorothy, we're already at another break. So listeners, we'll be right back after these words.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. Wanted to take a moment to talk about the two organizations that have come together to co-create Spirit Fire Radio. That is Spirit Fire and the School for Esoteric Studies. Dorothy, would you like to say a few words about the School for Esoteric Studies?
Absolutely. Thanks. Yes, you'll find out more about the School for Esoteric Studies at esotericstudies.net. We are an educational nonprofit that provides training for persons who have a spiritual practice that they wish to deepen. And you can find out more about that process and how to apply at esotericstudies.net. We also have initiatives, group initiatives that we invite people to participate in. One of the ones that we started a couple of years ago was intentional intergroup collaboration. We realized that as with many other like-minded organizations, we tended to focus just on our own activities instead of reaching out and collaborating with others that had similar or complementary activities. And so this radio program is an outgrowth of that, of an intentional collaboration with Spirit Fire, and I'm absolutely delighted that we have this collaboration. And once again, we're at esotericstudies.net. And over to you, Steve, to tell our listeners about Spirit Fire.
Wonderful. And just as I always say on the show, because it's so true, there's so much valuable information at esotericstudies.net, the School for Esoteric Studies.net. Great website. So hats off. And Spiritfire is an educational nonprofit as well. And our mission is to support people in making their spirituality practical, bringing consciousness and awareness into everyday life. We do that through our meditation program called The Practice of Living Awareness. It's an online program, free and always cycling around with new meditations. You can find out more about that at spiritfire.com. We've got a meditation center in Western Massachusetts and online programs as well. So we hope you'll check it out, spiritfire.com. Dorothy, back to the change process.
Yes.
Anything coming to mind?
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting to recognize is that we go through the process of change in at least two different ways. One is where there's some kind of crisis that precipitates the change. In other words, we react to some circumstance. And so we have to then adapt to whatever the new circumstance is. But we're often caught off guard. We feel out of control. And that's part of what makes it difficult, make the adaptation process difficult. On the other hand, we can acknowledge that change is the constant and we can be looking for opportunities to experiment, to try out new things, the little signals that let us know that perhaps how we've been doing things could use a little retuning. And from that perspective, we're being proactive in terms of adapting, and that can actually help us feel better because we feel more in control of that process.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to seeing uncertainty as this ordinary thing, that there will always be something new and always something to learn. We don't always know it all. I certainly know that I don't know it all. Life seems to always be teaching me something. And it's just going at it with a sense of wonder and curiosity and even being excited about, for instance, waking up. It's going to be a new day. What will the day bring? But certainly I appreciate what you mentioned about, you know, this, there's a point of crisis, you know, that says, all right, something's got to change. And I think that can be large or small. You know, there's times when we even sense, even if we're driving, oh, perhaps I made a wrong turn or I'm not quite familiar with where I am. I'm going to have to adapt. And what does that mean? It means, well, maybe I have to broaden my perspective. Maybe I need to slow down. Maybe I need to pull over and ask someone, you know. It's just, how do I deal with this new now and sensing when we might be off a little bit? You know, I also think of, we talk about forgiveness so much. It comes up again and again because there's so many lessons within forgiveness. And I think of, it was so poignant. We did a whole show on forgiveness, listeners, if you hadn't heard it. And, you know, Dorothy, you mentioned many times within that month that you can forgive someone but not condone their behavior or what they did to you. And there's quite a bit of adaptability going on there in that mm-hmm. there is a process happening and we're not actually saying, all right, I'm adapting that I was wronged and perhaps maybe I feel awful. Perhaps maybe there's even some trauma that's locked into my body or my energy body. And I'm going to adapt to that, or I'm going to conform to this new environment. No, it's saying I'm going to go through the process of change. And that doesn't necessarily mean condoning or accepting, but I think forgiveness is a really wonderful way of looking at adaptability in ways that some, you know, there is a crisis, and yet there's a way we can move through that through process. And yet it's not about, it's about creating the new. And where I see conforming as being staying in one point as a result of that trauma or as a result of a crisis, of almost letting it get the best of you. It's almost you have to stay out on the front of it and constantly be in the process of creating something new as a result.
So what that suggests to me, Steve, is that there's a skill set that we can develop because if I'm to change what I'm doing, if I'm going to adapt in some kind of way, then I have choices to make.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, I might not feel in the moment that like there's choices, but in reality, there are choices about, because one of the choices is always that I resist and I don't adapt. So how is it that we make those choices? How do we evaluate the different options? And I'm going to come back to something that, you know, we've mentioned before, but I think is so critical, and that is that oftentimes we find ourselves in situations where we are required to act quickly. We don't have a lot of time for thought and, you know, for internal debate. And what helps us be ready for those points is having rehearsed ahead of time. So one of the ways that we can help ourselves is to be going through a kind of continual rehearsal process. If we accept that change is inevitable, that it's a constant, then instead of just going mindlessly through our daily routine, we can take periods of time where we approach our lives saying, what if I did this differently? You know, what if I did, what if I drove this way? What if I, whatever the options are in the situations, not that you necessarily act on them, but you think them through. And you say, well, no, I wouldn't want to do that because, and so that helps you hone your values filter. You know, why is it that you would not choose that? Why is it that you would choose something else? And as I've mentioned before, we always want to have at least three options, not just two. And so doing that kind of rehearsal ahead of time helps us feel comfortable with adaptation, and also gives us the feeling that we are learning or we know how to do it.
Well, and excellent advice, because especially with the three, you know, have two or three options there, because perhaps you try one and it doesn't work out. And that's what often stifles people then from adapting. So you can then adapt to the fact that it didn't work out, and you can try another. I like to see everything as a cycle, you know, that mm-hmm. that word iteration, you know, repeating a process, and then each repetition of that process, the results of that iteration are the starting point for the next. So maybe one didn't work out, but you know, you value what you have learned and you adapt to using that knowledge and move forward again. So I agree, preparation and anticipation, as we talked about on a previous show as well, can truly be so helpful. I mean, life is a cycle, right, Dorothy? We wake up every day, it's new, and we adapt. And
well, that's true.
Stays right. It couldn't be more of a new day, it seems, every day we wake up.
Well, and for those of our listeners for whom music is a major mode for how they enjoy the world, if you think about the type of composition that is a theme in variations, whether, you know, it's piano music or string or orchestra, whatever it is, and you hear the theme, that's the familiar, and then you hear all of these variations. And to me, that's a beautiful image of the fact that there are many, many, many ways to live out a particular theme, you know, to get a particular place. But the other thing that to me is, I know we've talked about this before and we will talk about it again, but this whole idea of the values filter, we're living in an environment right now where the whole concept of values is being threatened. It's not being well modeled for us. Well, or the value that's being modeled is me first, do the others in, so that I come out first. That kind of model, but something that is more of a values that values the common good for all. We need to be consciously practicing how we evaluate action options against some kind of values filter.
Yeah. What will the results be? You know, seems mm-hmm. to be just act first with me in mind and deal with the repercussions later or not at all, right? Dorothy, we're already at a break. So we will be back just after these messages. Stay tuned.
How powerful your thoughts and beliefs are in determining your experience of your life? Is it really true that simply by changing some of the words you use in your day-to-day language, that you can change your life? I'm Megan Edge. Join me on Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
Tune in to People Like Us Radio with Megan Lyons, transcending the trauma of the human experience. Megan will be raising the universal consciousness by empowering listeners with their own inner strength, working past trauma and abuse. Megan will show you how to find true healing and inner peace through the art and practice of self-love. Tune in every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. For more information about Megan and her work, visit enterthelightllc.com.
What is a brilliant culture and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Would you like your next chapter to be free from fear and angst? Tune in to Your Next Chapter Radio, Navigating Through Life's Transitions with Shelley Ryan, the fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Shelley's contagious enthusiasm guides you through life's transitions deliberately, mindfully, and funnily. For Your Next Chapter coaching or to listen, visit YourNextChapterCoaching.com or call 602-617-8351. Next!
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Just before the break, Dorothy, you were talking a little bit about a values filter, and it made me think of a show I was just listening to on NPR that was talking about millennials and basically saying that, boy, they are really having to adapt to a very different world and a world that we even see as quite different these days. Interesting, they were talking about them coming of age, that millennials are now, you know, they're able to vote, they're turning 20, they're all becoming adults. And what do we see by looking at them as a generation? It was interesting. They were saying that they certainly, of course, talking about iPhones and them spending a lot of time on the internet and with devices, but saying that they really much rather spend time alone than in group. They're more tolerant, but that really they are a lot less happy and a lot less optimistic. And they took a caller on who has kids that are these Generation Z kids. And much of what you were saying, or at least it reminded me of that. She was saying that the future that they face is really, you could see how they would be angry and anxious and pessimistic that, you know, they've got crippling student loans. I mean, college costs, it's insane to think about what college costs versus what it cost when I went to school, even if you look at it in terms of inflation. House, the cost of a house, you know, it's more than what a middle income can handle. Healthcare, those costs, insurance costs. So interesting even to think about getting a job, you know, where you're required to freelance, you're required to have your own healthcare system. So they are really, I think, up against it in terms of needing to adapt in ways they must adapt. And certainly when we look at this political climate that, as you say, seems to be so self-centered and really lacking in that moral filter, that it's really quite self-centered and divisive, you know? So, you know, they really need strategies, right, for managing adaptability. And, you know, I sure hope that they present themselves.
Well, you know, the kinds of things that you're talking about to me are excellent illustrations of the whole need for adaptability. For example, you talked about housing. Single-family housing, which used to be the norm, is not necessarily a good use of resources and certainly very expensive. Where I live, there's been a real move towards shared housing, that is a housing building, if you will, being owned by groups, you know, or by several couples together. So, you know, pooling of resources in order to be able to do something that somebody wants to do. So I recognize the angst. I recognize the challenges that we're up against. And I also know that it's the thinking outside the box, so what are some other options type of approach that are going to help us reveal different types of solutions. And that's what the process of adaptation is all about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting that when you talk about group housing, that is what is needed. And yet this generation seems to really just want to be alone all of the time. So it's that interesting paradox of what is needed the most, you know, is really the last choice that they're going to make. So, you know, baby steps, right? One thing at a time.
Yeah. But part of it is what's modeled. You know, I think back to, this is a while ago, but I was doing work in a developing country where they had just finished an underground, you know, subway type system, and in the planning process there had been discussions about how to maintain this space, how to keep it beautiful. They were, you know, artists do montages, you know, and murals and stuff. And so what they did in parallel with the construction process was they launched a TV program. And one of the themes in the TV program had to do with keeping spaces clean and uncluttered and, you know, not spray painting, you know, obscenities on the walls and stuff. I can't give you a lot of really good examples of what was in the program, but the concept was to implant in the public mind that it was good to be able to, you know, that this is what being a good citizen was about. And I went back about a year later and traveled in that subway system, and it was pristine. Mm-hmm. You know, in contrast to some other subway systems that I've been in. And I was really impressed by that as an approach.
Yeah, like setting very good examples.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. So, Dorothy, we just have a couple minutes left. So I wondered maybe just a few strategies for managing change.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple that I wanted to mention. One, you used the term baby steps. I think trying one thing at a time, not trying to change everything all at once, is really critical. Another, the best way I know to say it is, don't keep pulling off the Band-Aid. You know, if you're trying something new, don't keep reviewing and critiquing all the time. Like, give yourself a chance to actually get into it and try it and experiment with it. And another that I've learned along the way is, if you're making a change, it often takes three times. I don't know if you find this, Steve, but I find I try something and then I slipped and then I try it again or a different way and then it's maybe okay. And then I try it a third way and then somehow it seems to catch. I'm in the groove. I'm doing what's going to work well for a while.
Yeah, you try it. It's a little wobbly. You find it a bit and then you find momentum, your groove a bit. Yeah.
So that's a trusting of your own process.
Yeah.
You know, allowing yourself to experiment, not seeing it as wrong if something doesn't work out exactly the way you were hoping it would.
I also find creative visualization to be such a wonderful tool. You know, visualizing, being the change you'd like to see. You know, there's that quote. Also visualizing, what is it you'd like to see? You know, I think of those millennials and their angst and sort of their pessimism. And, okay, well, visualize the world you would like to see. And then, you know, go out there, give it a try, but it takes patience. You know, you have to keep at it. But I find that visualizing it and appreciation and gratitude go such a long way in that process. Really noticing the usually not noticed and really appreciating as you're moving toward, as you're adapting, you know, really enjoying the process and smelling the roses along the way, appreciating in gratitude, trusting your gut as well, knowing, saying, oh, okay, well, I tried that, maybe not so, and I'm going to try something else and move in this direction, getting to know what feels right and what doesn't feel right. Well, Dorothy, we're already at the end of the show, but we've got one more month. This is one more week. This is a 5-week month. So, listeners, we're going to be back next week, and we're going to talk next week about strengthening your ability to adapt. So, really, a whole show dedicated to these strategies. I look forward to it.
Me too. Thanks for being with us, listeners.
All right. We'll see you next week. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.